you, if you're watching on the Bunker Cam, is really giving me the willies, but I think it's necessary to produce the proper tension. I hope you're not too disturbed by it in either spirit or soul, because next week I think we're going to go with blue here. We have to switch it around to keep our spirits up here in the bunker. But besides that, we have the assurance that God knows what he's doing on the earth, and with all these evil factions in the earth that are coming together, and we should be happy to see it. Don't be upset that things are going the way they are. Be happy when there's conflict in the Middle East. Be happy that Islam is making inroads. I'm not saying applaud it or just throw confetti, but I mean, maybe joy is the right word. Knowing that these things must take place, they were prophesied to take place, they have to happen. Daniel is the one, by the way, who prophesied the rise of Islam, and of course we're going to go to that passage. I've alluded to it, spoken of it many times. It's critical to the book of Revelation. So have joy when you see these things happening. Jesus said that to his disciples in Matthew 24. When you see these things happening, be at peace. Be at peace, because these things are supposed to happen. Peace and joy, that'd be great. I was so distressed when I watched the video from Monday that we have a Three Stooges poster here to keep us, our spirits up. You know, besides Christ, we have Christ. We also have Larry, Curly, and Moe. We need all four. We need Larry, Curly, Moe, and Jesus. But my favorite stooge, Curly, could not be seen, and so the only way to get him front and center was to turn the poster upside down. It may look like Bunker in Distress, upside down poster. Actually, it's just to show Curly, and this is not too of an unnatural position for him, upside down, because many times Mo would grab Curly by the ankles and bang his head on the floor. So you can not be too surprised to see Curly inverted. Revelation seems like a cluster fabrication of events. It looks like a random hodgepodge of unrelated scenes. And you think it is like a Picasso painting until you look at the structure of the book of Revelation. There is an internal inspired structure. The person I learned structure from was Dr. Bullinger, E.W. Bullinger. And A. Enoch also amplified it. And before every book of the Bible, in the Concordant New Testament, there's a structure. What a structure is the writer who's writing these books of the Bible, the writers don't realize that they are putting forth a pattern, and that things that are addressed at the beginning of the letter are readdressed at the end of the letter, and it's done in a methodical way that really defies human fabrication. And we have a link today at zenderonrevelation.com, where you are right now. We have a link to the structure of the book of Revelation. And I'm going to elaborate for you the main parts of this structure. Now, first of all, we have, I really want you to look at this. You can even look at it as I'm talking. We have an introduction at the beginning and a conclusion at the end. Well, Martin, everybody does that. Introduction and conclusion. But look what happens next. We have messages to the ecclesias from chapter 1, verse 4 through 3:22. And this is the messages of John to the seven ecclesias in Asia Minor. And this address of the ecclesias is done again in chapter 22, verse 12, messages to the ecclesias. So this goes back and forth. There's a technical name for this kind of structure. It's called a reversion. In other words, things that are mentioned at the beginning are reverted to at the end in the opposite order which they were presented. In other words, the first thing is a message to the ecclesias, and the last thing is a message to the ecclesias. The second thing here, as we're going to see, is the throne section, and then it's the second to last thing at the end, the throne section. All right, now if you look, and this is very hard, I realize, for the folks on audio, so I'm going to describe it to you as best as I can. And it's so comforting to see that there's an order here. It should comfort you, because you're going to realize that God is not Picasso. He's not throwing paint on a canvas. He's not a surrealist. He is methodically carrying out a purpose called, in Ephesians 2:2, the purpose of the eons. Now, we have 3 days, as I mentioned to you before, the day of man, the day of the Lord, or the day of Yahweh, and the day of God. These are brought forth in the chart on the far left, because this is the big picture, right? We're taking the big picture in this structure, starting from left to right. We're looking at the big themes, day of the Lord, day of God. And now we're getting tightening the scope as we go in to the chart. And next we're seeing the three roles of Christ. He is a prophet, a potentate, and a priest. You gotta love that alliteration. Ladies and gentlemen, that's why I have a pop filter for moments like these. Jesus Christ has three agencies he fulfills. By the way, Christ is not his last name, and H is not his middle name. It's not Jesus H. Christ, as wonderful and as that sounds, as melodic as that sounds. At least it does to me. Many of you are appalled. I apologize. Christ is his office. It's the Messiah. It's anointed. He's anointed to do a job. And as we're going to see at the end, by the end of this week, I'm going to talk about the purpose of the unveiling for Jesus Christ to unveil himself. I alluded to this in one of the introduction videos, but now we're going to get into it in glorious details. Yes, we are nearing chapter 1, verse 1, but we have to talk about some things still yet first. He is a prophet. He's a potentate and a priest. As a prophet, he addresses the ecclesias. He's telling them what's going to happen. A prophet is a spokesperson of God. Incidentally, a prophet does predict the future, but future telling is not inherent to prophecy. It's a mouthpiece. So he is a prophet in chapter 1, verse 4 through chapter 3, verse 22. And again, he's a prophet at the end when he gives another prophecy to the ecclesias in chapter 22, verses 6 through 17. Now, he's also a potentate. That's a fancy word for king. He's a king. Remember, I told you Revelation is about religion and politics. But as God presents it to us here, he deals with politics first. Throne section of Revelation goes from chapter 4, verse 1, through chapter 11, verse 18. I'll tell you why this is helpful. The throne section of Revelation deals with the political deliverance of the earth. The earth has to be delivered from its kings into the one king, Christ. So everything that happens under the throne section has to do with the political deliverance of the earth. So when you read about the seven seals, the four horsemen, war, famine, conquest, pestilence, chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. When you read about the saints being slain and the great convulsion of chapter 6, verse 9. When you read about the 144,000 and the vast crowd in chapter 7. And when you get to the trumpets, the first four trumpets affect the land, the sea, the water, the sun. And you get to the woes, the trumpets, the abyss, and the spirits at the Euphrates River. All these things have to do with the political deliverance of the earth. So if you are looking, for instance, if you're reading these verses, looking at the trees, and you think, wow, this deals with the religions of the world. No, it deals with the kings of the world. It deals with the political deliverance. And you only realize that when you back up to consider the forest and you say, oh, we're in the throne section. So knowing that Revelation has a structure will help you when you go internal now and start opening different verses, the seven trumpets, the seven thunders, and you will see this concerns the politics, politics, politics. Now, Jesus Christ is also a priest. He's not only a king, he's a priest, which means that he has to rid the earth of its religions in order to institute his religion, Judaism. So from chapter 11, verse 19 through chapter 20, verse 15, we're looking at the religious deliverance of the earth, because again, earth is fouled. Earth is polluted by human kings and human priests, by human government and human religion. And it all stinks. There are so many variations of it. We've seen so many variations of human government tried out, and they've all failed. Some are better than others. You know I've said that, and I'll continue to say it. However, all religions suck. But even religions, some are better than others. And you will find that Buddhism and Hinduism are actually better religions than Christianity. I'll say it again. Buddhism and Hinduism and even Islam are better religions, morally even, than Christianity. The Western religion, Christianity, is the most evil religion on the earth. And this is shown by the order in which these religions are destroyed. course, this comes later in Revelation. Don't know when we're going to get to that, but whetting your appetite. We're looking at the structure now. So whenever you're reading about the Ark of the Covenant and the faithful of redeemed Israel in chapter 11, clue, this is the temple section talking about religion. This is where we start talking about the beast, the wild beast and the prophet introduced in chapter 13. Now you know that the wild beast has to do with religion, because religion and politics, ladies and gentlemen, at the end are going to be united, amalgamated. And it's so good now when religion and politics are separate. I know I'm making Christians mad. If you're watching this, if you're a Christian, you're going to be mad because you want religion and politics to be one. You want the cross and the flag to be transposed. And you're trying to bring the kingdom in by voting for the right person, by bringing the right government. Whether you're a libertarian, a Democrat, a Republican, it's all going to fail. It's just different methods to fail, different ways to fall flat on your face. All these governments are going to be wiped out. Because the kingdom is not coming by reform. It's not coming by your vote. It's coming by the unveiling of Jesus Christ. It's not coming by a gradual process of cleansing, by a gradual process of education. It's coming by a sudden, swift declaration of war by Jesus Christ upon this earth for the purpose of establishing his methods, his government, and his religion, which is much to be preferred to ours.